If you struggle with bloating or just feeling like your digestive health is not on track, but you feel like every health recommendation just feels complicated, hard to stick to, and expensive, I have something for you. Seeds DS01 is a 2-in-1 probiotic and prebiotic that promotes benefits in and beyond your gut. It is formulated with 24 clinically and scientifically studied strains to support whole body benefits, including gut health, skin health, heart health, immune health, gut barrier integrity, gut microbial balance, and micronutrient synthesis in just 2 capsules a day. And here's the kicker. You don't have to refrigerate it. So many probiotics that are really high quality, you need to refrigerate. You just take these 2 capsules every day. And I recommend that you habit stack, especially if you're someone who you sometimes forget to take your vitamins. I can be like that. So I find that if I set out my vitamins, because you don't have to refrigerate these ones, set it by something like every night if you brush your teeth before you go to bed, or every morning, brush your teeth when you wake up, wash your face, put it right by that. And so then it's that reminder to do it, that reminder to take it, and then you have no excuse for not remembering, and also no excuse for not taking care of your gut health and feeling so much better. Because when your digestive health is on track, you physically and mentally just have more energy. And I just find that you have a clearer head and you just enjoy your life more. If you would like to try DS01 from Seed, you can get great gut health for less than $2 a day by going to seed.com/crystal and use coupon code 25crystal to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DS01 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/crystal, code 25crystal.
Welcome to the Crystal Pain Show, where we help you embrace your life right where you are and give you practical steps to get where you want to go. Whether you are in your car, folding laundry, cooking, cleaning, or maybe even just enjoying a cup of coffee and a few minutes of quiet, we're so glad you're joining us today. Here's your host, wife, mom of 6 kids, foster mom, entrepreneur, and author, Crystal Payne.
Welcome to another episode of the Crystal Payne Show. I have a repeat guest today, Jennifer Pepito. She has this new book that I actually read months ago. I finally got to have her in studio today. The book came out in May, and this book stepped all over my toes. And I needed it, and I am just excited to get to pick her brain today and learn from her because she is such a wise woman. The book is called Habits for a Sacred Home, 9 Practices from History to Anchor and Restore Modern Families. Jennifer, you have a wealth of wisdom to speak from. Tell us a little bit about your family and, you know, just like, I feel like there's so many women who are going to be really excited when they hear where you're at in life right now and the wisdom that you're going to be able to bring.
Oh, I love this question. And it's funny, Crystal, because my adult daughter is sitting in the room with us and I feel like she's my fact checker. So I'm like, oh, I better tell it straight. Yeah. So I have 7 children. The oldest is 31. She just got her Juris Doctorate. She graduated. Wow. I know. I'm so happy. And the youngest is 15. Mm-hmm. So I've been a homeschool mom for 27 years. I graduated my 6th child last year, and now my last one is a sophomore in high school. And we're doing kind of a hybrid. He takes some classes at a local sort of co-op situation, and we do some oversight at home. And yeah, the teen years, the young adult years are so exciting, and it was an encouraging journey for me to write Habits for a Sacred Home, because as you go into those years, it can be so disorienting. And as I looked at the wisdom in the Rule of St. Benedict and some of like these practices from history that were so anchoring to them, I thought, oh, a lot of this can be anchored to us. Like it can be something that's restorative and peace bringing to us as moms, even in sometimes family lives or culture that feels chaotic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so 27 years of mothering. How does it feel to have so many of your kids like not in the nest anymore. Like, what is that like?
It's a little sad, honestly. But I mean, I just went and stayed with my son. My third child just had his first baby. And so I got to go stay in their nest, which was incredible. They had a baby and they asked me to come and help out for a couple of weeks. So I was able to be there and spend time like being a part of their family, which was such an incredible blessing to, you know, see my children establish their own nest. And so, you know, kids come and go. I have an adult daughter with disabilities, so she might be with us for a while. I, you know, we had three children and then one son actually just moved back in to pay a little bit less in rent so he can save money for a wedding. So, you know, they do come and go, but those years of having all of my children in the home and of like intentionally reading out loud to them and spending time with them and going on trips together, they were so precious. They were so worth savoring. And, you know, I can remember a few of our last family vacations. I was like, this could be our last vacation altogether. And just kind of remembering that as moms, you know, speaking to the moms who are listening, that you just don't know how much time you have with your children and it goes by so fast. And so I do feel like I got that earlier and I was able to really just enjoy the time I had. And I'm so thankful. Like my daughter came out, she doesn't live with me, but she came out for this trip. So even into the adult years, we still have chances to connect with our children and bond and even sometimes remake what might not have been very good memories earlier.
Well, I think that's such an encouragement because sometimes, you know, you see those things online, like the marble jar where it's like, we have this many more weekends left or something. And it can cause women to almost live in this fear of the future, this dread of like what they're losing. And I think it's important to recognize and grieve. Like there are losses as you step into new seasons, but also there are gains. And I think, you know, seeing my now adult daughter, you know, this is her second year at college, like running her own home. Like she has her own home that she's taking care of. And she's like, Mom, I saved this much money at the grocery store. And she's always calling me to tell me these different things. And it is really this amazing place to be to watch your children adult. And I think people don't talk about that as much. You know, they're just like, oh, it's so sad. Like they're not at home anymore. And there are gifts and blessings in both places, but there also are new challenges too. As you look back on those 27 years, is there one thing, you know, that you would say to the moms who have younger children at home? They're like, if you do nothing else, do this.
Yeah. And I love that you mentioned how precious it is to see our adult children adult, because I see that the values, you know, sometimes I felt like I wasn't doing a very good job, but my adult children, like they grow their own plants and they have gardens and they have libraries and they bake bread and the things that were important that I was doing and trying to do with connection and with intention, they are doing and doing to a better degree in many ways than me. But you know, for sure, for young moms, I think, you know, two things. One, like get your identity sorted out, because so many of the mistakes that I made as a mom were in an effort to prove myself, kind of to like, look at me, I'm a good mom because I do this or that. And if I had had more confidence in the Lord, for me, my faith is such an important part of that. I could have been more restful as a person and then more present, because I think the most important thing is to be present with our children in the way that God is with us. But I didn't really understand that. And I don't know if I could have without, you know, having my identity sorted with the Lord first. But, you know, if you can just like look your kids in the eyes a little bit more and give them more hugs and be a little bit less like upset about if they didn't get their homework done and a little bit more intentional about knowing them and knowing what's going on in their heart, I think a lot of pain will be, there won't be as much pain in your lives and there'll be a lot more joy. And joy helps with learning. Joy helps with responsibility and adulting. When there's more joy and more peace, then they're more mature as children and as adults.
Well, I think, you know, giving our children the gift of a mom who has a calm spirit, even in the midst of so many different chaotic things that can go on, you know, understanding that we can't control so many things, but we can choose to put our trust in the Lord and that He can be that rock in the midst of really hard storms of life. And when we get that, I feel like it just changes everything. And it's a gift for our kids to see us walking with the Lord and trusting the Lord. But something that you said really made me think of this quote in your book. You said, "It feels much easier to physically direct my children than to wait on God to direct them." And I think so much of stress, that at least for me, when I am feeling stressed in my parenting, it's because I'm not waiting on the Lord, because I'm not resting in the Lord, because I'm feeling like I gotta manipulate and micromanage and make this thing happen for my child. Like, it's all up to me. Have you felt that before?
Oh, for sure. You know, I've said, I think I said in the book that parenting teens and adults requires nerves of steel, because it is hard to know when to just keep your mouth shut. My friend, she said, her mom said, "I pray that God would put one hand on my shoulder and one hand over my mouth." Because, you know, we do have a God who loves our kids more than us. And sometimes we think we have to micromanage and, you know, have all these boundaries if they don't do what we want them to do. And, you know, I think we can trust God to work in their lives. Like, He does love them. He is working. And so, you know, getting our identity out of the way, learning how to rest in God and trust Him, and learning how to just commit things to prayer. Like, some of the stories that we've heard of people who later on had a big impact for faith, they might have had a little rough period, but their mom kept praying for them. Mm-hmm. And later on, God used that testimony to bring people to Him. And so I think, you know, just continuing to be faithful ourselves, because I think the worst thing that moms can do is if you see your kids struggling, that you remake your theology or you remake your values around your kids' struggles. And I think that's the most detrimental. But if we as moms can be stable, I talk about that in the book, just having a sense of stability where we keep doing the right things, even if everyone around us, even if nobody around us is doing what we believe is right, if we keep doing the right things, then, you know, I think our family sees that stability. There was a book called Selfish Reasons to Have More Kids. Mm-hmm. It was by an economist who was arguing that having more children is better for the economy. And he was saying that most kids turn out like their parents. And so the way that you live is communicating a lot to your children. And I think, you know, for me, like, I read so many books about, you know, drug addict teenagers or just like terrible things, that I think that it gave me almost too vivid of an imagination of the things that could go wrong. Mm. And I think we do have to protect our brain space a little bit. Like, you know, if you're a mom and you're reading every tragic story of what could go wrong, maybe you should stop, because our imagination is already so vivid, and we should be trying to imagine hopeful things. Mm. We should be, you know, if our child is out late at night, we should be imagining that they're dropping off food to the homeless, or that they're, you know, street evangelizing, or that they're reading a book with a friend, or, you know what I mean? Like, we shouldn't just always be imagining the worst case scenarios. But I think what we fill our minds with does sort of create thoughts for us. Mm.
Okay. So you said something about changing our theology based upon our child's struggle. And I would love for you to unpack that a little bit more. Like, what does that look like? How can we fall prey to that? I've never actually heard someone say that, and I'm really intrigued.
Yeah. I mean, I think it could go into topics that are not that publicly comfortable, I guess. But I just think, you know, sometimes you have a child who's in some way living a life that you don't agree with morally. Mm. And so you're in this uncomfortable gray space where this is your loved one. This is somebody that you treasure as a person. And you have to decide, like, how will I be in relationship with this person? Mm. And so I think a lot of people at that point, they decide to reject their deeply held values and accommodate their, you know, change their deeply held values basically to accommodate their child's moral choices. But I don't think we have to do that. Like, I think we can have grace for people and have trust, like trust that the Lord is working in them, but also, you know, be stable, because people are looking for leaders. Mm. People aren't looking for people who are just as immoral as them, people who are just as morally confused or morally compromised as them. People are looking for people who will continue. Like, I can remember my grandma actually I was a teenager. I was a rough teenager. I was making some immoral choices. And my grandma wasn't judgy with me. Like, she didn't reject me. She wasn't mean to me. But she was also, like, just so godly that my conscience was smote because of her, you know, godly actions. And I think that's what people need, is for us to be stable. I continue, you know, trusting in the Lord and going to church. Like, even if your church maybe isn't very supportive of your child's moral choices, or your parents. Like, sometimes I think there becomes this thing where the grandparents disapprove. So you cut off the grandparents so that you can supposedly love your child. But then you're cutting your child off from all this wisdom and knowledge and life experience. And I think sometimes we just have to ride things out a little bit and stay, you know, stay. For me, it's staying anchored into God and His Word. And, you know, for someone else, it might be just your deeply held values or your cultural, like, what is normal in your culture. But I think we have to stop accommodating people's, like, sowing their oats period, their rough period, and changing our adult wisdom to accommodate young experimentation or foolishness even.
That's really wise. I was thinking, as we were, you know, talking about this, habits of a sacred home and that concept, you also mentioned earlier about how, you know, you don't want to become stressed over kind of doing everything right. And I'm putting words in your mouth, but I think that was, you know, it's how we can become so focused on making all the right decisions that we're living in constant fear of doing something wrong and messing up our kids. So how do we find the balance between, you know, wanting to have these habits and this stability, but also not falling prey to feeling like, you know, we have to do everything perfectly?
It's such a good question. And could we encourage younger moms to do this? Because sometimes I think, Crystal, if a mom had told me, like, there was older moms in my life who had young adults and teens, and I still thought, oh, I'll just do it better than them. Like, their teens are going through this struggle or this period because they made a mistake, but I'll just do it better than them. And so sometimes I think that as much as I want to help younger moms relax a little bit and be present and have a little bit more self-acceptance and acceptance of their children, I think sometimes we just have to go through what we have to go through. But, you know, the Bible says the fearful will not inherit the kingdom. And there is this element of, you know, when you look at studies of people who leave their parents' values or leave the faith, often it was people who grew up in highly perfectionist environments. And so, you know, if there's no kind of acceptance of humanity, and I think I probably said it the last time we talked, you know, when you look at the scriptural narrative, you kind of think, oh, I'll look at how to be a perfect parent and I'll do that. But you look at Adam walking in the garden with God, like, in perfect intimate relationship in the perfect environment. So everything was perfect about his parenting, and he still made this huge mistake that cost all of humanity. And so for us as moms to think that we could get this so perfect that our kids would never make mistakes and there'd never be any problems, it's just misled. It's misguided. And anybody, any parenting person who's trying to tell you that you could be so perfect, your kids would never make a mistake, they're lying. They probably don't have children. Or, you know, it's like one of the big books when I was a young mom that we tried, that guy has two kids and one of the kids doesn't even talk to him. So it's like 50% failure rate. Don't listen to these people. You know, instead, I think we just have to, like, keep doing the right thing. Keep, you know, listen to, I mean, I know sometimes we have really bad parents, but sometimes our parents might have something to say. The grandparents might have something to say. Like, I think we need to be a little bit more sort of practical and less perfectionist, a little bit more graceful and a little bit less uptight. And we would have so much more joy because, you know, it's like one of my favorite verses, in his presence is fullness of joy. And that's the atmosphere we should be creating in our homes, is one of laughter and hope and the idea that mistakes will happen, but there's grace for mistakes. And, you know, and for sure, like, teach values. I mean, the book Habits for a Sacred Home is full of values that we could teach, like the, you know, habit of stewardship or the habit of simplicity or the habit of prayer. So we should have lives that are orderly and that where we have good habits, but also all of it needs to be in this framework of we are children of God. God loves us no matter what. We'll keep trying. We'll be faithful, but we're also going to be receivers of his grace instead of constantly condemning ourselves and others.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something that scares you? Maybe something that you wish so much you could actually do, but the thought of doing it just terrifies you. For me, for the longest time, that was public speaking. I really wanted deep, deep down to be able to get up on a stage and stand up there in confidence. But the actual getting up on the stage was one of my greatest fears, like something I would run from and avoid from when I had the opportunity. No. But I had to really dig into some deep-seated dysfunction and unhealth and uncover and uproot that to get to the place where I could confidently stand on a stage. And now it's something that I actually really enjoy doing. And it's no longer about me and what terrifies me, but it's about how I can serve the audience and be an inspiration to others and share as a conduit. It took a long time to get there and a lot of work, but it was so worth it. Something that has really been helpful to our entire family when we're talking about digging into deep-seated dysfunction and uprooting unhealthy patterns has been therapy. I highly recommend if you are struggling, if you're feeling stuck, if you're feeling scared of something, therapy is something to really seriously consider, to have someone to sit with you and process these things and give you outside perspective and encouragement and a listening ear. If you've never tried therapy before and you're like, I don't even know where to start, well, BetterHelp.com is a great resource to start with. It's entirely online and it's convenient, flexible, and it's suited to your schedule. Here's the best thing. You fill out a brief questionnaire and you're going to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapist at any time for no additional charge. Overcome your fears with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/crystalpain today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/crystalpain. When you think of summer, do you think of grilling out? I know I do. That smell of burgers on the grill, that sound of the sizzling, and that taste when you just bite into the perfect brat or burger. And you know what you need? You gotta have a bun. And for some people who maybe you're watching what you're eating, you're like, have you looked at the ingredients in those buns? I'm just gonna eat it plain. But that's no fun. Well, Hero Bread is here to be a hero because they reinvented the bread and buns that make summer great. Fluffy, delicious flavor and texture with no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. I looked at the package because I ordered some to try before I did this ad. Y'all, I could not believe what I read. And it tasted quite good. One of my favorite ways was to toast the bread and then put some Laughing Cow cheese on it so that you're still not having a lot of fat, and then sprinkle it with some Truvia and cinnamon. So good and packs nutritional punch. The texture is just like regular bread, very soft and fluffy. And the best part about it is that it packs a nutritional punch. 0 to 1 grams of net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and high in fiber. So you don't have to stop eating bread or not have a bun on that juicy hot dog or your BLT sandwich or that sizzling burger. Keep the carbs out of summer without compromising flavor with Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co and use code Crystal at checkout. So that's Crystal at HERO.CO, hero.co to get 10% off. Use coupon code Crystal. As we're headed into the back to school season, I know many of us parents, we want to make sure that our children are getting the help that they need when it comes to subjects in school, areas maybe that they're struggling in, help with homework, areas that they're excelling in, maybe not getting challenged enough in class. Well, IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies, and it's designed to help kids really understand and master topics in a fun way with positive feedback. I was first introduced to IXL a few years ago when Silas's math class, his teacher changed to using this. And it was really, the goal of it was so that they could get a better read on where all of the kids in the class were doing and where they needed to be challenged more, where they were struggling. And I loved the real-time feedback. The other thing is that it really challenged Silas because he's someone who's kind of independently motivated and he loved that he could work ahead and work at his own pace. And he wanted to see those stats and see the results. And he ended up being able to then move up in math to a different level because he was so motivated and they saw that he was really doing well based upon his stats from IXL. So I'm really grateful for IXL because it just helped him to be able to be more challenged when it came to math. This program will improve your kids' grades. Backed by research, kids using IXL are scoring higher on tests. It also will work for any of your kids. There are advanced algorithms that power it, so IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. Also, one subscription to IXL gets you everything. So if you have kids different ages in your home, pre-K to 12th grade, IXL covers it all. Also, it can save you money because instead of hiring a tutor, you might be able to just use IXL, and a single hour of tutoring costs more than a month of IXL. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And my podcast listeners, listeners of the Crystal Payne Show, can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. So visit IXL.com today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
One of the things that I loved in the book, so with having 3 older kids and then 10-year gap and 3 younger kids, I realized we had really fallen out of some of the good habits that we had with our older kids. And I think you even alluded to this, like how it's easy to kind of, I don't know, you feel like, we're not having good habits because there is more challenges when you have older children and younger children because the older children are in and out of your house all day and they have jobs and they have activities and they have different things. And so with the younger ones, I feel like I'm having to be a lot more intentional, but also that grace-filled. Like there's no way we're going to do it perfectly. Just yesterday I was posting on Instagram and I was saying thing about how I am always dropping balls like every single day. There's no way that I can juggle all the things. And so every day I have to intentionally decide, okay, which things are the priorities I'm going to pick up today and focus on. But I do really feel like the habits and that consistency of certain areas, I always say it's like routine, not schedule. You know, it's kind of these boundaries and guidelines that they really do serve us. And in the beginning, it can be a challenge to set them up, especially if you've kind of been free for all for a little while and not started with that. Talk to the mom who she's saying, okay, this idea of habits, it scares me. It feels overwhelming. I feel like we have no habits and I don't even know where to start.
Yeah. And I love that you mentioned how it is with older and younger kids. Yeah. It's funny that you asked that because we are in that, that season as well, where the older ones, when they were home, they were so well trained that they picked up after the little ones. And so I thought I was training the little ones, but what really was happening was that older ones who had been trained were cutting, they were picking up the slack basically. Mm-hmm. And so there is, you know, always that readjustment and like, okay, I've got to teach this child to clean his room now, but we just be faithful. Like it's not about perfection and it's not about throwing our hands up and giving up when we realize we've made a mistake. It's about staying on the path of faithfulness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, I mean, the habits, like one of the things that we work on in our Restoration Home community is tracking your time. It's the, you know, there's two things that we actually do first. First, we have moms write down, what do you want your children to remember about life in your home? Mm-hmm. Because we have to have a vision. Like if we don't know what that is, then we'll just be sort of reactive to our daily life. But if we know, like, I want my children to remember that I was loving and that I was present and that we, you know, we had, like, we took walks together and we had time in nature together and we had this peaceful home. We read aloud together. If we know what we want, then it's easier for us to adjust our lives to accommodate what's important to us. But then also, I have moms track their time as like a first habit, because sometimes you might be getting a lot more done than you know, and you maybe need to slow it down a little bit and take more time to just sit on the grass with your kids. And maybe then your kids will actually respond to you a little bit more if you, if they're connected to you. And so we track our time and see, you know, are we scrolling for 3 hours a day? And that's why our kids are like screaming at us and fighting with each other and destroying the house. Or are we, you know, are we taking time to be intentional? And then just start with a morning routine. Start with having just three things that are a rhythm. Start with making your bed in the morning and reading the Bible with your kids, or start with making sure they have a good breakfast so that they have the brain power to do the rest of what they need to do that day. Mm. And so I think just taking baby steps, we talk a lot in our community about just 1% improvement, because if you're consistently making 1% improvement, then you will start to see the fruit of that. But if you're just every day kind of throwing your hands up and saying, I don't even know what I'm doing here, it's going to stay like that.
Well, and there's so many different studies that have shown, you know, how good habits beget good habits. And so starting your day well, just with three things. And you know, it's like, if you go to bed at night, the thing I always try to have is when I go to bed at night, I know what the first few hours of my morning, like the plan for the first few hours of my morning. And it's not ever going to go perfectly, but just having some, kind of those guardrails that when I wake up, it's not just pick up the phone, scroll, put out fires, whatever. It's wake up with a plan. And for me recently, it's been, I try to have the first hour of the morning that I do not pick up my phone, and then it's time in God's word. And we go take a walk and then eat breakfast and do our devotional and just those little things. Like it's, there's such little things, but they start my day in so much better of a way than if I start my day by scrolling.
Totally. 100%. And it's, you know, for both of us, and I think there's a lot of moms listening who probably have some kind of online presence, whether they have a business or they're running a co-op, and it's so easy to, you know, I have to fight against this. It's so easy to get into the putting out fires mode instead of living according to your vision. But if we put first things first, if we spend time listening to the word, or we spend time, you know, with some quiet, some brain quiet as we start our day, we're going to be able to be sort of in authority over our day instead of being stepped on by the circumstances. Mm.
And I also think it changes our headspace, you know, because it's like when we go into our day, it's like we're doing it on purpose versus just letting our day happen to us. It really changes, like, oh, I actually do have autonomy over how I spend my time. It's not like the schedule is the boss of me. And when we start to understand that, I feel like it changes so much, because then we can realize, oh, I can actually say no to things. Like, we don't have to pack our schedule so full. We don't have to have our kids in three different activities, you know, and just understanding that can really help us to then have the space to have these habits. You talk in the book a lot about heroes, and you share some of different people through history who have really impacted you and how their lives can make such a difference. And then how we can develop habits around those. Could you just share maybe one of, there's so much in the book, but one person in the book that just you really feel like could just be such an encouragement to someone who's just starting in on this journey of habits?
Yeah. So each chapter in the book is based on one of the rules of Saint Benedict, which is like a 1500 year old sort of guideline for life. And each chapter is paired with a woman in history who sort of exemplified that rule. So the first one that comes to mind is Edith Schaefer, because she was a mom of like four kids, one of them really struggled in his life. And so she had to maintain that faithfulness that I'm talking about. Her obituary, like people wrote about her that she was the most, you know, faithful, the most joy-filled. Like she exemplified godliness, like had such beautiful things to say about her at the end of her life. But in her life, she wrote books, she hosted people, she loved her children, she loved her husband, who many people say was a difficult man. Mm-hmm. And I just love that that picture of somebody who wasn't, like I don't think she thought she was perfect. I think there was a certain amount of humility that she lived with. And even in her writing, like she talks about how she was trying to cook for all these people because they hosted almost like a Christian guest house in Switzerland. And so she was like cooking for people and cleaning up after people. And she had sick kids and just talked about how it was a burden sometimes, but she would, you know, do it again and just keep going and trusting the Lord and just hanging on to him. And so that example of someone who was just like a normal woman, like a, maybe even a little bit of a messy woman, but she was so faithful in continuing to keep a home and love her family. And then her life became this big ripple, because this is the message of the book, is that the ordinary things we're doing, loving our children, having dinner around the table, being kind to our neighbors, these ordinary things are actually very world saving in a culture where it feels really chaotic. These practices can save civilization. Mm. And Edith Schaefer, her daughter actually also wrote books. Their ministry, LaBrie, has nurtured many, you know, leaders in our culture. Some people we might not even know of, people like Oz Guinness, and there's others. And so this little bit of faithfulness, just taking care of her home, eventually writing some books, it modeled so much for her family and her community, and it did change the world.
Mm. One thing I remember from, I can't even think of the name of her book. I know you, the one that's, what is the name? What is, like, she has a book that's very well known. Do you know what I'm talking
about? Her daughter's
about?
Like, for the children's sake, for
no,
the family's sake.
Edith Schaefer. Schaefer,
LaBrie is I think the most famous.
Okay.
One.
There's one that was something about your home or something.
Oh, what yeah. The Hidden Art of Homemaking.
Hidden Art of Homemaking. Yes. I read it years and years and years ago. And the thing I always remember is she talks about, they had a lot of, I think they lived near a train station or something. And so they had a lot of people who were homeless. And I remember she made this tray for this homeless man and she put a flower on it and it was just making it beautiful. And that's always stuck with me. Like just little things, like going out of our way, and we can't do all the things, but like, how can we bring a little bit of beauty into other people's lives in the midst of, you know, a world that feels chaotic? And I think that is what this book that you have written is about. It's like these little pieces of beauty that we're weaving throughout our day, throughout our children's lives, that's what they're going to remember. Like that's what they're going to hang on to. And that's what's going to be such a gift for them for years and years to come. It's that stability that we're creating for them that I feel like as life changes, as seasons change, like going back to that and remembering those, the rails, the boundaries that, you know, the stability that our parents set for us, it really does make such a difference. And so for the moms that are listening who you feel like, oh, my life is such a mess, there's so much, it's so chaotic, but just how can you bring some peace and some stability and some beauty into life today can make such a difference. As we close this out, I would love for you to just speak over the women who are listening. This is when this is going to air. There is a lot of heaviness in the world. And I have just been feeling it anytime I get on my phone. Like anytime I really talk to anybody, it just feels like we have this collective heaviness that we are carrying, that we're feeling. The world, there's a lot of unknown, there's a lot of unrest. And I would just love for you to speak to the woman who is feeling that and just speak some peace and encouragement to her.
Yeah, you know what? One of the verses that I really highlight in the book is Psalm 37. And it was such a comfort to me because when I started writing this book, it was, you know, post-COVID and we live in California, which does feel like otherworldly, like possibly the zombie apocalypse. It's a mess. And so, you know, I was feeling all of this fear and unrest for the world. And that's part of what motivated me to write it, because I thought about, you know, Saint Benedict lived during the fall of the Roman Empire. I mean, it was like the pagan hordes going around and sacking the monasteries and sacking Rome. And so he did live in this time of great chaos, but he set himself apart, like lived in a cave, I think, for 3 years to be quiet with the Lord, and then came out with this rule of life that many say saved Western civilization, mm-hmm. because they were writing down the ancient texts and the ancient recipes and the history. They were keeping civilization alive, in a sense. And, you know, Mother Teresa said, if you want to change the world, go home and love your children. And even for those moms whose children maybe are grown, you can still teach other people to do that. And so Psalm 37 says, yet a little while and the wicked will be no more, but the meek will inherit the earth and delight themselves in the abundance of peace. And so being able to meditate on that truth that the world looks bad right now, it looks scary right now. There's wars and flooding and hurricanes and heavy things happening, but God is in control. You know, in Proverbs, it says that, you know, the wise woman laughs at the days to come. He's not going to leave his people forsaken. And so, you know, it says, yet a little while, the wicked will be no more, but the meek will inherit the earth and delight themselves in the abundance of peace. And so I think even in the chaos, even in the hardship, we can begin to think about moments when we've had that peace with God, moments where we were taking a walk with our family and you could feel the cool breeze, or sitting around the table and having a happy meal. Like, I think sometimes we have to stir up hope for the future by remembering moments in the past that were full of joy. And as we do that, I think we can bring ourselves into a state of calm that will help us be able to stay hopeful, because our children need us. They're looking to us. We create that atmosphere, whether they're young or old, they're still looking to us to reassure them that the world is a hopeful place and that things will get better. And so I think that as we can just settle ourselves down and really live in that peace of God, then we can communicate that to others as well. And sometimes that is just thinking about moments that you have been happy and believing that God has more of those moments in the future.
I love how you shared that, and also just that the theme of hope, because I feel like we live in a world that we need hope and we need to cling to hope, and Jesus is our hope. And instead of imagining worst case scenarios, like you said, for us to believe hope and to really hold on to that and look to that. And I just love how throughout your book, you give so much hope, not only kind of theoretically, because this book, I feel like you did such a great job of bringing in some, you know, just some real deep truths, but also practically, because you share, I love at the end of every chapter where you have, you know, just practical takeaways, even recipes, like you make it so that it doesn't feel like this is this, you know, big heavy book that we're reading, but it's full of deep truth that can really make a difference in our homes. And so thank you for writing this. And I just encourage everyone who is listening, hold on to hope, believe hope, not worst case scenarios, and go get a copy of Jennifer Pepito's book, Habits for a Sacred Home, 9 Practices from History to Anchor and Restore Modern Families.
Thank you for joining us today. For more great resources, please visit crystalpayne.com.